What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of She or They with Kittens. I'm Kittens, and today I've got Seerus Basi on with me. Seerus is an incredibly inspiring, non-binary, Iranian-American content creator who honestly, really made an impact when I discovered them. I came across his TikTok a couple years ago. It was at the top of 2020, I want to say. And before that, I hadn't seen an openly queer Iranian American with their family on top of it. His family is so beautifully accepting, and that is just not something we really see in our culture and a lot of more conservative cultures. So it honestly made me emotional when I came across their profile. So I'm super, super excited because Seerus is just incredibly eloquent and well-spoken and so knowledgeable about just literally everything identity related and intersectional identity related and social justice related and beauty related. So we're going to get into all kinds of great stuff around being present online, mental health, how to deal with judgment, fear, bullying, insecurities, sense of self, pressure from society, all that good stuff. We're going to get into that today. And I'm just so psyched for you guys to hear what Seerus has to say. Before we get into today's episode, make sure you like and subscribe. Leave a comment down here if there's anything in this episode that resonated with you, or if you have any questions for me or Seerus that we can answer for you. And go find me on Instagram at I Am Kittens and at She Her They. And yeah, let's get into today's episode with Seerus. Hi!
Hi, what's going on?
Nothing, how are you?
I'm fabulous, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah,
I'm so excited.
Same,
all the way from New York.
Long overdue.
Very long overdue. Also, I was just saying to you that your makeup looks absolutely stunning. And you are the beauty inspiration that I have. And I think you can now see my red lip, everyone. So hopefully it's popping as well.
Yeah, it's nice and juicy and perfect. I love it. I love it so much. Before we get into anything, can you go ahead and introduce yourself, name, how you identify, pronouns, all that.
Of course. I am Seerus Basi. I use they, he pronouns. And I am a content creator and I've worked in media for 6 years and I'm also a brand consultant. So I essentially started in the beauty and in the skincare space. And I also talk a lot about social justice, activism for queer communities, for trans people, for non-binary folks. And I integrate that into my content through comedy. So that's my whole shtick.
I love it. I remember I first came across you on TikTok. You just popped up on my For You page.
Joy. Purely, yeah. I was going to say, it literally was the first time I think I'd seen another, very, very, visible non-binary Iruni who was, out there and, creating content and had this incredible career. I was, I think it was probably one of the most joyous days finding you and now knowing you.
Same. Yeah, literally same. Mm-hmm. I was just, I mean, I think it was a video with your boba and your family and that alone, I'm already just finding somebody who's queer, non-binary, gender non-conforming, just, of the community who is outward, very open and also just, Persian and all the things, that alone was mind blowing for me because the representation just, there was nothing. There was nothing. Yeah. Seeing your family on top of it was this openly positive, supportive family, I've never heard of or seen or experienced that acceptance and warmth. So it was literally seeing the dream and it existed. And I was oh, I'm so overwhelmed.
You're so sweet. I feel the feeling is very mutual. I think something that I've been thinking about recently too, and we can get into this, but a whole, for me, a lot of the space that I occupy online is, as I mentioned, right, creating content with my parents to reflect not only a positive relationship, but also to try and unpack this weird sort of bias, but also maybe a fallacy that not every queer person has a positive relationship with their parents, but then also trying to keep it real that my relationship with my parents is unique, right? The reality is that a lot of queer people don't have this relationship. For me, it's recently I've been thinking about how do I find that sweet spot, right? Between like creating positive representation, but also acknowledging the reality. So, you know, I mean, I think that's, I love what I've been doing, and hopefully everybody finds joy through my videos, but it's definitely like an interesting, because it's the same thing. I mean, I don't know any other, I know very few like Iranian American or Iranians that are queer that have this sort of relationships with their parents like this.
Yeah, it's really unique and it's so beautiful and like I mean, I don't know if it was always like that with your family, if they were just like chill from the jump or if it kind of like took a minute.
Honestly, like they were pretty chill from the jump. It's so funny, y'all. Baba is like truly the sweetest, realest person. And I remember I was probably like 10 years old, and I was sitting on the couch with him, and he was like reading his Kindle. And then I remember I looked over and I was like, okay, I'm gonna come out. I just wanna tell him. So I remember I told him, and I said, Bob's like, I think I'm definitely queer in the spectrum somewhere. And he didn't respond. And I thought he was like, in the moment, I thought he chose to not hear it, which all of a sudden then I started to panic and freak out. And he just looked over after a few seconds. And I think he just like smiled and like, he was like, anything else? And I was like, first of all,
Yo.
acknowledge me. But second of all, but he was just so like, I'm glad you had this moment. I'm obviously like, it was very interesting. And then I came out to my mom, my brother and stuff, but he, my dad, it was very interesting. I mean, we had conversations. We've definitely, I think, I'm curious to hear your perspective too. I think for me, coming out as queer was a very different experience and a learning experience than coming out as non-binary and gender non-conforming. That was like, it took time to develop a mutual language between myself and my parents and like a lot of relatives, and it's still a work in progress versus like I think the queerness they just got off the bat.
Yeah, that totally makes sense because that is at least a more like universally understood identity. Like people get that. But when it comes to gender and conversations around gender and identity, it's fairly new for like the average person. So there's a huge learning curve. And then once, you know, learning the language and then being able to apply that language and process what you're hearing, like that's a whole undertaking. And interestingly enough, like I remember because I was actually outed when I was 15 to my dad, which was not fun.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I was posting stuff on MySpace with my girlfriend, and I didn't put together that my dad would be lurking, and
Oh, I
or that
see.
somebody would send him something that I had posted. Like I thought I was in my little bubble, and I forgot that adults
Yeah, of
or other
course, in a
people
safe
would see
space.
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know
Yeah.
these things. So he found out, which was actually kind of it took away the like fear of having to, how do I tell? You know, how do I say
Yeah.
this? Which was kind of a
Yeah.
relief, I guess, in that way. But yeah, it took a long time for him to come around. But you know, we over the years had so many discussions. And when I was in college, I studied queer theory and feminist theory, which was like freaking over a decade ago. I feel so old. But I had the language for a long time. So I would kind of, you know, sprinkle these little bits in, or anytime something in pop culture would come up, like Caitlyn Jenner coming out as trans, and then Caitlyn Jenner dating women. So Caitlyn Jenner coming out as trans and being a lesbian, like there was a lot more there. So anytime I had a chance, I would make sure to bring that up and kind of have some kind of conversation, even though my identity was largely this like don't ask, don't tell space for many years with that side of the family. So I was like, any chance I can talk about how this functions and intersections and spectrums, I was like, let's take any moment to educate and learn. So that really helped.
Yeah, I mean, I resonate with so much of that, and I think it's almost like all, but you have to be willing to learn. Like that's what I've also learned, right? Like I have family who isn't willing to learn. It is what it is. I'm not gonna go beyond my share of energy and effort if you're not going to at least listen. And I think
Right.
that it's not, it's I, it, so much of it is everybody says it's a microcosm of age. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I mean, I have like
No.
colleagues who are old, like much older, who are more willing to listen than like people my age, like cousins my age. Like
People who are
I
younger,
find it
yeah.
fascinating. Like it's
Yeah.
weird. I mean, yeah, of course, like there's like obviously a microcosm of being younger and progressive and growing up in certain environments, but like younger people still like practice patriarchy and still practice like a lot of the violent systems. It's just like
Right.
hand-me-downs from their parents. It's
Some people
wild.
try to make it their whole, like, they think it's funny or try to make it their personality to be like, I don't get it. Pronouns, what's that?
I
Non-binary,
know.
what's that?
Like,
And it's like, it's
shut
not cute to be
up.
ignorant. Why are you being willfully ignorant and thinking that's a personality trait? Like, that's not cute for you. It's not.
At all. I'm also just like, in general, my whole thing with education, just being online, is now we're sort of in a weird place because with TikTok, there's like truly a like a trend around like this whole pronoun, like all the pronoun conversations, which are getting more visibility right now, I think is really fascinating. But I think what happens is that you see an experience on a social media platform and you treat it as a monolith. Like you don't realize that like the
You're in a
experience is very
chamber.
unique to that completely. So it's like, I don't think I have to use comedy. Otherwise, I'm gonna get lumped into like, oh, I'm pushing this agenda, or I'm just being like a social
Right.
justice warrior. When in reality, I first I have a background in sociology. It's what I studied. It's what I, you know, I'm well versed in articulating, but you just can't do it online anymore because you're just gonna be put off as like X, Y, and Z. It's
Exactly,
so
exactly.
frustrating.
It's so funny too because like I just from my industry and my background being like a DJ and in the music world, I have a lot of cis hetero dude friends
Yeah.
that are
Yeah.
traditionally the ones that just like don't get it or don't know or are ignorant or have
Yeah.
no reason to learn or reason to understand or reason to care. And those are the ones that I've had the most, I think, expansive conversations with because I've
Yeah.
made a safe
Yeah.
space for them to ask me things because
Yeah.
it's so much
It's
of the time there's this like defensive thing that comes up where somebody wants to teach you or educate or learn and they're being aggressive about it and nothing will turn off somebody who has a fragile ego or anything like that than feeling like they're being attacked or made to feel stupid. So using comedy
Yes.
or using a very like safe, come here, let me, you know, share this with you. Let's talk about it. There's no wrong question. Let's just discuss. That I feel like is the
Yeah.
move to educate people 1000%.
It's so fascinating you say that because I have that experience as well with like a lot of the straight white, like cisgendered men in my life that like I grew up with. Obviously, I was born and raised in a suburb of Boston. I went to a predominantly white school. I went to a predominantly white university, institution, university. And a lot of like my straight white friends, men who were cisgendered men, I've had the most engagement and desire to learn. I mean, it's interesting, even just not outside of just like gender and sexuality, but like how they practice misogyny, how they have to like unlearn certain behaviors. I have gay friends who are men, who are like cisgendered men, that practice misogyny so
Oh, yeah.
violently and don't realize how. I mean, we know this, right? There's no, like, you can practice patriarchy no matter who you are, like regardless
Yeah.
of your gender, whatever it is. But it's just, I mean, and obviously not to say that I don't have like a lot of trans friends and queer friends that I've grown up with, a lot of Iranians specifically, who sort of are willing to learn. And I feel like when I'm wrong, I like to be called out and be
Yeah.
held accountable. But I don't know, you're right. You sort of have to create, especially online. I mean, my job now, right, is like I create content, I work with brands to tell stories. But a lot of the organic content that I create is to produce more visibility around queer experiences. But I can't do that if people feel like I'm not creating a safe space for them. It's just not going to
Right.
work. It's just not going to happen. I mean, it's why I held my parents' forum. I held this forum and invited parents to come and ask stupid questions because it's like, I understand that you feel uncomfortable asking that in front of maybe your kid or someone you're related to that you want to learn more about. But you also do need to have a space where you can ask questions and maybe sound stupid, maybe accidentally use the wrong
Totally.
pronoun so that I can be there and navigate you, you
Yeah.
know?
Yeah, totally. There's just it at the end of the day, it there's different strategies for this. And I understand people that don't want to do the emotional labor of that because it's
Yeah.
exhausting to educate people who may be fighting back or may get
Totally.
defensive. But if you
Totally.
know the best way to help somebody expand their mind and their understanding and their compassion is to just like you get
Yeah.
in where you can get in. You got to do the work somehow.
Yeah.
So like
Oh,
get in
yeah.
there. Do you think that with all of the new representation that we're having, especially just on social media with queer Iranians, because again, we haven't really had representation like that before the last since TikTok, to be honest. Like I have no
Yeah.
reference point
No, it's a
pre-TikTok.
fact. Correct. Yeah.
So
Oh, yeah.
do you feel like this presence will be making a difference in more traditional Iranian communities? Or like how do you feel it will penetrate those communities and kind of adjust, if any, at all?
I think it will take our, and I'm using our very lightly because I know we have very different experiences, but I think it will take our straight cisgendered counterparts to open up the door to their communities to us. Like, I don't know if we can like, I don't know if I can penetrate those communities myself. However, the amount of times that I get messages from, you know, like a 27-year-old straight, but very open-minded Iruni who's like, I send your content to my very close-minded parents and family so that they can see the representation out there. It really takes allyship because it's sort of like that, the situation of, you know, a lot of the reason why I shoot content with my dad. I can talk about being respectful, respecting pronouns, respecting gender identities, etc., all day long. And have, you know, half the population, if not more, not listen to me and not want to listen to me just by the fact that they know that my identity is X, Y, and Z. My dad, who is a straight cisgendered man who sort of occupies this very masculine looking energy, him talking about it,
They
he will
respect it. They,
penetrate those communities and those spaces. They will respect, and unfortunately, that's the reality. Or, like, you know, he'll be on a construction site. He works in real estate, and he'll hear someone say something offensive or something problematic or something homophobic or transphobic. For me to try and interrupt and say something, I'm sure I'll get the like, well, whatever, whatever. If he's in charge and he says something, it's all of a sudden like, oh, sorry, like, okay. Like it does something very different. So to answer your question, I think it takes those allies to create to sort of like break down that barrier that we are initially put into and placed into when people that are not in our community find our content.
I feel like it's the allies are very much like Trojan horses for the cause. They're coming in there and
Totally,
just being like, I'm one of
totally.
you guys. Don't worry about it. Nothing wrong here. And then they just like hit them with the facts in a way that they can actually understand.
Yeah. It's interesting because my senior year of college, I wrote an op-ed that was basically a big fuck you to my college because I had this experience of like, I'm Persian, I'm Iranian. There were very few Iranian students in my college. And I had obviously like a few friends, but the larger like SWANA community at my college was very homophobic and transphobic. And then there were a bunch of gays, like a very large population of gays at my college, but they were all white, like gay boys. And they just fully did not recognize their own internalized racism. So my entire college experience, I fought for creating a space where we could talk about nuanced issues in a way that would like surpass stereotypes. I can't remember, like I literally every time that I would do something, like if I was being seen as Iranian, it was Middle Eastern or Arab. If I was being seen as queer, it was like not quite in the gay, you know, world that my counterparts were in. I just wasn't there. So I wrote this op-ed being like, the social justice community at this college really fails people with intersectional identities because you don't even understand what intersectionality is. It's like you don't see that my experience is very different than X, Y, and Z. And so it, like to me, it's also like intersectionality is a huge part of this. as an Iranian, I can commiserate with a lot of people right now, for example, given everything that's happening in Iran, but especially as a queer Iranian, I commiserate with the queer communities that have been fighting and are fighting for freedom, even when the majority of the people that are also fighting for freedom are not fighting for their freedom. It's a very, very nuanced topic.
Right. No, it's so true. And for anyone that's watching this that doesn't know what intersectionality is at all, that's just when you have multiple marginalized identity factors that are kind of stacking up and crossing over. So it's not just that you're queer and that's it. It's that you're queer and a person of color, or you have a different socioeconomic background, or, you know, anything else that might make your life hard stacked on top of each other, basically. So totally. Yeah, I mean, it's really, I think across the board and still, honestly, even in Los Angeles, I noticed this, especially in the like queer women's community, it's very segregated. It's very much these are like white queer women's spaces, and these are like POC queer women's spaces, and there's not much crossover, and there's not much understanding still, which is like it's a work in progress, I think, across every single culture and space and society. It's definitely a work in progress, but it's so important to have that understanding that people have different experiences and everybody should be welcomed and understood and deserves that space. So God.
And I think also checking ourselves. No, but I mean, it was also just like, I think for me, I had just started to develop a relationship with my gender in a way that I hadn't understood before, right? Like growing up, I was deeply sad because I had a lot of gender dysphoria and a lot of, you know, like body dysphoria. And it was just like, I either thought you were trans or you were cis, and that there was no gender nonconforming identities that existed. I didn't know about them. I mean, I went to college and I found out what pronouns were. And I'm someone who, you know, has very much now sort of understood that my identity is sort of somewhere in between. But so for me to have that experience and not really be open to it until college, and then also being a sociology major, you really do have to, I try and give people the benefit of the doubt, but also go back to what we were talking about, which is like, you have to want to learn, because if not, it's not going to work.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And it's so interesting having these conversations, especially around like gender identity, because everyone has such a different experience in like finding themselves or how they identify or how they don't identify or whatever it is. Yeah. And I'm so glad these conversations are happening and that this language is more widely available, because even for me for a long time, like I've identified as a lesbian since like forever. But as far as gender went, I was like, I don't really have any dysphoria. I don't feel like I'm, you know, towards the trans side of things whatsoever. I'm very comfortable in my body and how I present. But for me, more identifying more with like non-binary stuff, which I don't make that a big part of how I ID, but to me, being a lesbian where I'm a woman, I am, you know, my partners are women, my world has honestly nothing to do with men. And we are in a patriarchal society where everything is revolving around men. And the definition of woman is largely tied to your interaction with men. So to not have really anything to do with men, I was like, what is my role as a woman then? How am I operating in society as a woman if I have no connection to men? Where do I belong? And so that was something that I was exploring a lot more. And I realized is a lot of people now, or at least like in my community, they're like, my gender is lesbian. They're like, I'm not woman or man, or some don't even identify as non-binary. They're like, I identify as a lesbian because that is really kind of its own little pocket that exists.
Fascinating. Yeah.
It's really different.
I'm admittedly not close to this very, very fascinating nuance. I mean, it's so interesting and so real. And I think what you said about how, like, if I'm not taught, like, womanhood and it being historically tied to manhood and these arbitrary like categories that we've created. It's so wild. That's such a so fascinating to me and really, really interesting.
Yeah.
I haven't like thought about it that like truly. You're like opening my like I think also don't mind my jug of water. I feel like it's been I feel like for me it's also I don't really have the experience of holistic queerness when it comes to social settings because so many social spaces are intended and created for men in queer spaces. Even in queer spaces, I mean, there's two lesbian bars in New York or three lesbian bars in New York.
We have zero here to this day. Zero like, in Los Angeles. Zero.
Like, we don't, I don't think, I think, yeah, it's very hard to even outside of sort of like heteronormativity to still not tie the existence and like the purpose of womanhood as tied to men. Like it still happens in those spaces a lot and very or frequently.
Even now with like the way or the definition of lesbian and some other gender related identity terms. Now it used to be like lesbians are like women who love women. But it's now kind of changed because there's so many non-binary lesbians and there's so many trans lesbians and they wanted to make it a bit more inclusive. So now the terminology, which I personally don't like, and I feel like we need to figure out a different definition still, is non-men who are attracted to non-men. And I'm like, why are we still centering men in the
Still centering men. Yeah.
It's really odd to me. It's really odd. So we're lacking in language, but you know, it's, I mean, that shows that everything around this is a work in progress. Everything is a work in progress when it comes to language and evolving these understandings and educating each other, even within those very tight, you know, nuanced communities. We're all still learning. We're all evolving and we're all changing. We're all trying to figure out the best way to respect each other's identities and express ourselves. And it's a process.
I have a question. I have a question for you. Do you feel like, and this might sound controversial, but I think about it all the time. In a professional setting, from a in your world as a DJ, as a content creator, and as a creative artist, do you find that there is an advantage to leaning into the non-binary identity that you hold, or disadvantage when it comes to working and working with brands? So I'm making this up, but like if a brand reaches out, do you think it helps to lean into a certain direction of your identity? To give you an example, for me, I find that brands still consider me to be just a queer man and not a non-binary creative if I don't look femme. Which is like, there's so much to unpack there, but like, I find it interesting. So for me, it's also like, sometimes it can be a disadvantage to, for me to, I guess, like occupy the world as a non-binary person from a professional standpoint too, and not be like categorized just as a queer man.
I mean, for me, I don't think there's really an advantage or a disadvantage. Because people more so focus on the fact that I'm, you know, perceived as a woman in society, a femme woman. And that's kind of the main thing, because at least on the music side of things, it's everything's still wildly dominated by cis hetero men. And when there are women or queer people of any sort or people who present as feminine in any way, they're kind of lumped together. And it's not really, there's not really conversations around, around gender identity in that way as much. So it's not really as much of a thing. It's more something that comes up, at least for me, when I'm having, if I'm doing a brand partnership or there's an article being written or there's a press release for like, you know, I'm putting music out, whatever. And we have to make sure they like mix up the pronouns. I'm like, can we please, it's she, they, babes. Like, can we just yeah. sprinkle some in yeah. there, please? Yeah. Just like, please, just a couple. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yep. Yep.
And it seems so small. It seems literally. So small, but it does make a difference. But I think at least for me, like I still definitely have a massive privilege, at least when it comes to working with brands or being public facing, because I still occupy the space of like feminine woman in everybody's minds, essentially, unless they like care to get to know me. But
yeah,
I don't know. It's definitely, I think, something that's more of a issue or obstacle for people who are more perceived as men in the eyes of like mainstream society. Yeah. And if they are doing anything that is queer in any way, whether that is like who they love or how they present or anything like that, the issues are more there. Because I feel like people just haven't adjusted their brains yet.
Interesting.
Yeah.
No, or like I don't know, like that, like this amount of facial hair that I have on my face, mm-hmm. people will see it and be like, I thought you were non-binary. And I'm just like,
yeah, oh my god, fascinating.
Because it's like, because I'm just like, but it's made me insecure. I mean, especially working in beauty, mm-hmm. sometimes I also don't want to go to an event and not have a completely like clean shaven face. And I realize that I'm like subscribing to like
expectations,
tropes of femininity, expectations to like be a certain type of non-binary, like mm-hmm. the feminine pretty version. And then I'm just like, will I get hired again? Will they want to work with me if they don't perceive me or see me as beautiful? Like, will they like question my, I don't know. There's so mm-hmm. much that I still am working through, or like, it's just second nature now. Like I have like a shaving schedule. If I know that I'm going out or like New York Fashion Week, I feel like people won't take me seriously if I have like, you know, even this amount of like facial hair. And that is a bias that I need to unpack, but I think mm-hmm. it's also a very real experience, because I've seen it happen to other creators where like they don't quite occupy the version of non-binary or gender non-conforming that person has in their head. And then you have to be like, mm-hmm. okay, well, the version of it that you have in your head is not the true version of what the identity means, but you're in a position of power. So what am I supposed to do?
Right. God, I have to send you this book, and I'm forgetting the full title of it, but it's based on Middle Eastern related stuff and gender, and it's called like something and something, and like women with beards and
oh
like
women's oh yeah I think it's I is forget. It Afsana Najmani, yeah, it's
yeah I'm forgetting, I don't know if you read, or women with mustaches or like something,
women with mustaches and men without beards, men without beards, yes. and women with mustaches,
yeah, something like that. Yeah. Something like that, yeah. I feel like this kind of touches on that, but well, yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine the pressure. And this was actually something I was going to ask you, being like, how do you feel like being more public facing, because you've had a background working in the corporate world, which I know that comes with a whole other slew of issues, but becoming a creator and being more public facing, especially working with beauty brands and like in the fashion world of things, how do you feel like that's affected your sense of self?
I feel like for me as a queer person and as a non-binary person, I need like 30 years to figure out who I am. Mm-hmm. I need many years, right? I started at 20 years old. I start like the version of me at 20. I'm 8 years old right now, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think about it that way. I have so many years of growth that I need to go through, of maturing that I need to do now in the identity that works for me. But I always say that I started my life when I was 18 in terms mm-hmm. of 19, right? Becoming public facing in the middle of all of this can be very detrimental to not only mental health, but also to your identity, in the sense that you're not finished.
Right.
So then you have all these different people and places telling you things and who you are and hiring you because of this. And it's sort of like you lose the track that you were on, right? If I'm using this analogy, it's very silly and it's very crass. If I'm 8 years old, right? And I'm getting it in the sense that like I have had 8 years or 9 years of experience in my identity. That's nothing. I mean, it takes people lifetimes to really understand who they are. Being public facing now has just made it more difficult for me to not lose my sense of self and to not lose the trajectory that I'm going in. I mean, like, even, you know, like being at New York Fashion Week parties and events, I'm the only non-binary person that gets invited to many of these events, to many of these top events. It's all these, you know, like fashion girlies, and I'm not a fashion girly myself, but it's a lot of like, you know, straight white women.
Yeah.
Some of whom do not take me seriously, and that's fine because they don't know the trajectory that I'm going towards and they don't know that I'm going to be the next big thing. But like, no, I mean, like, truly, like, the way that I think about it is that like, I think part of it is dealing with your people do not, even where I'm at right now, which is, you know, public facing, I have a platform, I do not get taken seriously. I do not get taken seriously. And even having it had corporate past, I have to fight to prove that I have that knowledge all the time. So I think part of it is the struggle and the frustration of still, and I hear this from friends of mine, from folks who are A-list celebrities. You can be one of the most prolific people in media, and you still won't be taken seriously if you have a certain marginalized identity or some sort of perception that's non-normative. So I experience that, my version of it, in a much smaller scale. But the positive side of it is I'm finally making some noise. I mean, I'm finally, all those sort of visions I had when I was younger of like, oh my God, I want to connect with more queer Iranians. I want to work with these dream brands of mine. It is happening. I mean, those things bring me a lot of joy. And it's just a constant battle of being in the moment for me because, you know, I told myself when I reached X level, I'd be fine, like, I'd be good. And then it's like, you just want more. We've talked about this. Yeah. I mean, it's just
the finish line keeps moving forever and ever and ever.
It keeps moving. And it's like, what's enough? And then you realize, and then now there's like a whole slew of, you know, I never used to do the influencer circuit of like the events. And now I understand like the drama and the weird like energy. And I'm just, I still want to be grounded in reality. I want to be grounded in something that's like, like very real and very non-fantasy in a sense, because that fantasy can get very dark. The fantasy can turn into a nightmare very quickly, depending on the night.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I think this is really important stuff for a few reasons. Number one, I think a lot of people on the outside who maybe don't have a public facing life or job or anything, they just have a nice normal, quiet life where they just have, you know, their day job or whatever. There's or somebody who's young and growing up and is, you know, following all their favorites online. There's this idea that once I have this, I will be happy. Or this person looks like they've got it all together. And like, if I could just get there, then my life would be easier. And I think, you know, I even have this where people are like, I had a fight with somebody recently, but they were like, your professional life is so obscenely easy, as if like I have no struggles because I'm not working, you know, a 40-hour work week in a certain way. And I'm like, honey, the spirals that I go through every day, the spirals.
And also I say this a lot. It's like being in, like working in social media, you're not working an 8-hour day. It's true. You're working a 15-hour day in a sense, because you're always on. You're always. Like, we can have a conversation about this whole, it went viral on TikTok of like, it's try being an influencer, it's so hard, all these things. We can have that conversation, but we can also have a conversation around the, like, and I say this, anybody who wants to do social media, it's, you're cut for it or you're not. Like, you're either, and if you are, okay. The level of, I think, the mental, it's just everything's out on the table. I mean, it's like we sign up for it, but part of it is we don't. I don't sign up to get people to send me hundreds of like death threats a day. I didn't sign up for that. I signed up to be public facing, but I didn't like, everybody's like, well, what do you expect? And I'm like, I don't expect people to send me death
threats. There's such a dehumanizing aspect.
I don't expect that. Yeah. So for that, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it's just like this, it's comical to me that people would assume that there isn't this very, very difficult. And also, if you're not in it, you don't know.
Yeah.
If you're not in it, you just don't get it. You just won't get it. It really is like you have to experience it to understand it.
I think that it's really dangerous when people look up to their favorite, you know, influencer or celebrity or creator or anyone who's just present online and think that it's just easy. And it's, they don't remember that we're 9 times out of 10 presenting the good parts and the curated parts, and that we're likely spiraling and dealing with some other shit behind the scenes. And I think that's really important to like hammer home for people, that it's no matter how big you get, like literally the biggest celebrities and most like, you know, Grammy award winning, fucking massive Lifetime, whatever people that I know are still going through the same, you know, self-worth questioning and insecurities and anxiety and fear of failure and fear of not being accepted and fear of losing relevance, like all these things that never goes away. And I think it's something that's so important to figure out how to manage, no matter how old you are, no matter where you work or what position you have, or if you are public facing or not, or massive or not. It's really, really important for people to know that.
For me, I'm learning about when to like not always be on. And like, I'm not the type of person that like will want to get on camera and like cry. I think I've like cried once or twice, like publicly, just to like, again, feel human. Some sort of a connection with us. Yeah. Like just be like, this is like a very real experience for me. And like, this is, you know, obviously happening, but I think what happens, and this is a whole nother conversation, but like if you become too vulnerable, then you start to like quantify that and you sort of gate like your, what's my engagement on that? It's just like, it gets to a very dark place for me at least.
Yeah.
So, but I try and be like, sometimes like, you know, when I go home, obviously I film a lot of content with my parents. I'll catch myself wanting to film or refilm an interaction and then stopping and being like, you don't need to film this. Like, you don't like this. No one needs to see this right now. Like,
this can just be yours.
This can just be mine. This can just be mine right now. And, you know, my boyfriend's helped me a lot with like, I'll just be endlessly scrolling and he'll just be like,
enough.
You're done. You're good. You've seen it all. Like it's okay. You know, in the moments that like, I don't need to further fall into this world of social media. It's like, I almost wish I had like a wrangler who could, you know, right now it's a combination of Michael and my parents who help me sometimes, but it's a lot. It's very overwhelming.
But actually that's another thing I wanted to talk to you about. You were like the master of the graceful clapback. Like you get heinous.
The art of clapping back.
Yeah. You really, like you get really disgusting, hateful comments that are just horrifying, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you get even more than like I pass by. So
yeah,
some people take the angle of just, you know, ripping the person to shreds like Drew does, which I love that. That's
fun
and amazing.
Yeah.
And other people will just, you know, be really upset and shook by it. And, you know, send people off whatever, but you do it in a very graceful and witty way that I think is so interesting. And it's really like, you know, comedic and powerful. And I love that. So what made you take that angle? Like what inspired you to go at it that way?
I, for sure, without a doubt, I owe a lot of that articulation to Alok, who is
If you
Amazing.
don't know, they're a poet, comedian, writer, author, incredible human, someone who I look up to. And I just used to get so angry when people would say things. And then I was like, I don't want to give them the time of day, but I also don't want to let it go. It feels like, I feel like I'm back in third grade when I like couldn't say anything to like the bullies. And then I felt so bad because I couldn't stick up for myself. And now that I have a platform, I think to myself, okay, if you're going to say this, I'm sure you'll feel comfortable if I, show it to 100, 200, 300,000 people. Like, I'm sure you're comfortable, right? And then I think so Alok, for me, Alok has always found grace and empathy in also the sort of in their world when people have said horrible and nasty things to them as well. So I took time to like try and create a version of it for myself. They give so much empathy and love, and for me it's more of like a combination. Because it's something that I always say is everyone who comments something negative on my page is trying to like find my trauma, and I always say you're just revealing your own. Like, it's not for me, because it's not once you're in a place in your life where you're comfortable, and thank goodness that I have my days and it's hard, but We all do.
I'm light years ahead of where I used to be. You could tell me that this is a piece of bread, and I would say it's a bottle of water. You can tell me that I'm X, Y, and Z. I don't see that. That's not my problem. That's you. It's not like, that's the thing, is that people always, it's there's this I think it's a quote, and I'm not going to misquote it, but it's, you cannot hurt me without my permission. And I think that's really hard to do. But basically what I try and do is, and I do this I seldomly now, but I'll take a comment and I'll sort of like look into this person, see who they are, and deem if they're worthy of being on the chopping block. I do not, and something that Alok does, which I again shout out to them for doing this, is they sort of block out the name of the person or the username. I don't do that. I think that that's my form of accountability. I'll be graceful and courteous and give you empathy, but I won't give you anonymity. I'll like,
If you're not going to be anonymous and you're
that's
coming
not
out
true.
here being that
No.
open with your hateful words, like, why am I going to
Sure.
protect you?
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, I love that way of saying it. Yeah. So I think, the reason why I do it is, to me, it's also like a form of my own therapy and forgiveness. It's like each time I write something and I post it like that, I can just imagine the younger version of me just like feeling so proud and being like, when I didn't have the language to articulate a response, I do now. And so a lot of the times when I post these things, people will comment or they'll message me like, hey, like, this is incredible. Like, don't give them the time of day. Like, they're not worth it. And I appreciate that. I know they're not worth it. It's not about them. It's about me finally having a voice and offering accountability in a sense to this world. Because to your point, there's amazing people like Drew who will eviscerate people. And that's a really strong form of accountability. And if what I can do is also a strong form of accountability, in a way that works for me, then I'm all for it. So, I try not to do it as often now, but, and also the funny thing is people are like, don't, I'm like, girl, if you knew how many, I get hundreds of these a day. If I gave all of them attention, I
That would be
wouldn't
your whole
even
platform.
sleep. Right, it'd be my whole platform. So again, I try and find a balance, but I genuinely now, I think for a while it was sort of fake it till you make it. I'm so I don't I think if you are well adjusted and you're comfortable and secure in who you are, you have no reason to be hurtful and mean to somebody else. I've had to check myself over the past few years when I've wanted to like get like so, on TikTok there's like sometimes when people make videos that like stitch another person or like make fun of something, like there's no reason to do it. It really isn't. Like, it's just not, especially when it's something that like you don't have agency over, that is like a whole different playing field for me.
I mean, I think what you said about if younger you saw you doing this, you're doing this because you didn't have the voice when you were younger.
Yeah.
I feel like this has to be so healing to be able to do that. And it's such a
Yeah.
good thing to
Yeah,
keep in
it
mind, I
is.
think, for everyone when we're having a hard time with something. to think about what we would do for our younger self, like what our younger self wish they could have done in a moment when we're feeling insecure or unsafe or bullied or, you know, not good enough or whatever. Like, if you were little, what would you want your big brother or sister sibling to do in that moment for you and do it for yourself now?
Yeah. 100%. I think anybody's entitled to respond however they want. Like, to your point, like, there's many different ways that people respond. This is what works for me right now.
Yeah.
And I think people forget that I was a writer. Like, I think if I was to teach a course, it would be the art of clapping back. I think for me, writing, masterfully writing off someone in a way that sort of connects and merges a little bit of humor with empathy, with a little bit of cheekiness, with a little bit of shade. Like, I think that's my sweet spot.
Yeah, it's such a good balance that you have. I'm like, nobody else does
that. I mean, here's the thing though. I can be ruthless on TikTok. On Instagram, I'm much more courteous. On TikTok, I can be more ruthless. I mean, I definitely, people are going to see sometimes my comments are just like very trolly, but like, whatever, I'm entitled to that too.
Yeah. You're allowed to have fun. You're allowed to have fun out there.
Yes, for sure.
Okay. I want to get into just a quick bit about what's going on in Iran right now. And I think right now, obviously everything that's happening in Iran is like incredible and crazy and just, you know, long overdue. But being here as somebody who's grown up in the US, has Iranian family, is very connected to the culture, but not directly there and not having had to experience a lot of the oppression. I feel like we've talked about this, there's a lot of dissonance and there's a lot of like guilt and privilege and connection. And just, there's so many complex feelings all at once. And I think that makes it hard to figure out where you belong in this moment in time. How can you help? How much do you speak? How, you know, how are you supposed to feel? How are you supposed to act?
Oh, you and I.
I still daily, it's like, why haven't you posted about Iran today? And then it's, you know, why haven't you posted more about Syria and Turkey? Because are you just one, you only care about one thing? And it's like,
I know.
Bro, come on. So
it is.
What kind of advice would you give? Because I think this is something that not only us as Iranian Americans, like not only us in this moment in time are dealing with this, but there's so many things that always happen in different countries, different tragedies, and people who are ethnically tied to those countries that aren't there, whatever. And I think there's got to be a lot of struggles around how to navigate and deal. Yeah. So what kind of tips would you give to somebody?
It's hard, right? I mean, I try and think about what, because I'm also, I mean, I've said this a bunch of times. I think sometimes people mistake my platform for being an activist page, and I'm not. I just have intersectional identity. So the fact that you just assume that to be an activist is like also problematic. I have a lot of friends who do grassroots activism that dedicate their entire platform and their life to activism. I would not give myself that title because I think it would be disrespectful to people who are actually true activists. I can advocate for certain issues, but you know, the advice that I get from them is sort of the advice that I pass on to other people. It in sort of large scale movements, in revolutions, in any sort of like political dissidence where it's like, there's conflict and violence, you need to pace your movement in order to not burn out. And I think that's the thing, is we were all burning out. Like, I was posting every day, multiple times a day. I was losing, like, people were who had been on my platform for what my platform is, which is, part of it is my business and my job, which is to talk about beauty and lifestyle. Obviously, like, I think it's important for people to use their platform, and they should. And I was really, really, really sad to see a lot of my friends not post anything about Iran, not once. But I also would be like, I mean, you and I talked about this. I'd get messages all the time. And it's sort of like, you're equating how much I care about Iran, whether or not I posted today. Maybe I was really fucking sad today and I didn't post anything because I was just sad. Maybe I'm saving my energy. Maybe I'm doing things behind the scenes that you have no clue. Like, I think the frustrating thing too is like, with, for example, with the devastating earthquake in Turkey and Syria, and how horrible it is, I've been doing most of the stuff that I do is behind the scenes. I've been donating. I've been like reaching out to my friends who are setting up GoFundMe. I'm not doing a lot of the, I mean, I've posted links and all that, but I've gotten messages from people and I'm like, I wish you knew what I was doing behind the scenes, but that's none of your business. And immediately the response, oh, well, yeah, like what? And I'm just like, you're just saying things to say things. Like, stop. You're being really, really obnoxious. Yeah, and also, like, I think part of it is right now in Iran, you have, oh my God, it's so complicated, right? You have the diaspora community of Iranians. You have Iranians that there's this sort of the ethno-religious and ethno-region conflicts, right? You have the, I made this video with my brother, and it was like a fun like TikTok where basically like it was a lot of white people growing up didn't even know what Iran was, or like that Iran was different than like bordering countries. And I made this video responding to like this white person being like, oh, like, so you eat hummus and you speak Arabic, the assumption that we're all the same. It got, I mean, granted, I think that it's definitely like I think for me, there's so much context that gets lost in people thinking that like I didn't know that there are Iranian Arabs, that there are many languages that are spoken in Iran, that there's so, but it wasn't about like, to me it was like taken out of context, and that really hurt me because I got comments and it was only from like six or seven people, but to me, I'm very sensitive, I'm a Gemini, and like I freaked out, right? Like I was like, my God, they think that I'm like I don't know, everything phobic, and that
Oh my
but it was
God.
just it was frustrating too, because for me it was in that moment, it was like, okay, well, Sears, learn, like what can you like learn? And it was in that moment, it was just like, but it was just taken out of context in a way that really sucked. And then I reached out to the person who like reposted it and was like, this person hates Arabs, like they're so racist. And I was like, hi, you don't know me, you don't follow me, do you want to have a conversation, because this is like really obnoxious what you're doing. And they immediately like doubled down, and then was they were like, oh well, and I was like, yeah, like you don't come after me unless you're willing to have a conversation, unless you're willing to also point out what's really happening. If I right now feel like something happens where I need to be held accountable, I will take the time to like hold myself accountable. But with what happens in Iran, it's so complicated. It's so nuanced. People are really emotional. My biggest piece of advice to anyone is the real people will always be with you and will always stand by you. I say this all the time. For the six or seven people who really tried to like ruin my day, I have hundreds of people that reach out to me just thanking me for like all that I'm doing and for even posting, which is the least that I can do. So my advice is, one, pace yourself. Burnout is very real. This is a long revolution. Iran will be free, and it's going to take a lot of time. And two, everybody has a different agenda, and some people unfortunately have like really obnoxious agendas that are targeted towards bringing other people down just for the sake of bringing them down and making a point about a certain discourse. And it is what it is. If I'm the victim of that, I am. I'm sure I will be in the future, but just watch out for that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's very, very important. Very important advice. Favorite parts about Iranian culture that you love?
Selfishly, our food is the best food in the
It really
world.
is.
I think that our it really is like, and the funny thing is anybody who has Persian food loves it, like loves it. I have so many like American friends who've tried, gone to like Iranian restaurants. They love the food. I think our food is always,
Superior.
I mean, it's selfishly me. I think we have such a gracious culture. This sort of whole energy around Taaruf of wanting other people to have an experience of, our having positive relationships with family members who want to see us, really thrive is a wonderful thing. And I also find that our history to be fascinating, our writing, our poetry, our historical figures to be so prolific in shaping who we are today. So I think that combination, that orchestra of culture to me is like what makes me the most proud to be
I
Iranian.
love that orchestra of culture. That's such a good one. Favorite Persian dish?
Thank you. Okay, tie between tachin with chicken, like chicken in the tachin that my mom makes, or I really love just like kebab kubide with rice and mostakhiyar, like that as a dish. But also, like, my mom makes a really good fesenjoon. So I have to say, like, traditional dish, her fesenjoon is phenomenal. And it's hard to make a
Yeah,
fesenjoon,
I
I
haven't
think.
had fesenjoin in a
It's
while.
really
Oh
hard to make
God,
good fesenjoon.
so good. I made
Oh, yeah. I'll make some for you. Oh, I will have to make
please.
it for you.
I made my first horma sabzi like from scratch the other like I don't know, 2 weeks ago with my dad.
I love a good horma sabzi
That
too.
yo, that is,
Okay.
I was in the kitchen all day. Like, oh my
I know it
God,
is. Yeah,
it's not
it's
a
not a.
joke. It is not a joke. And my
No.
house smelled like it for
No, it's not a
weeks,
joke.
which is not bad,
No.
but three
Okay.
Desert Island beauty products. That's skincare and makeup.
Shiseido S. Okay, my Shiseido SPF stick, because I'm on a desert island, so it's probably hot and sunny. I would definitely bring with me my Maybelline Lifter Gloss, which is the glossiest and most amazing lip gloss, just so that I could be like moisturized and hydrated. And then I think for the last product, I would bring my Olaplex leave-in conditioner so that I could actually like keep the curls going. So I got you hair, skin, and a
Very
little
nice.
beauty.
Solid.
Those would
Those are
be
good
mine.
ones. Those are very important. God, I need to do a leave-in. My hair is so dry. And then dream creative space. So this is anywhere in no rules. Literally, it could be on the moon, under the water, like you whatever you want to do, what would be your most magical space to just write or read or be creative and just kind of like be with yourself and your thoughts.
I love that. If New York City had a little island that then was like in and of itself like a tree house, like a really like comfortable cozy cabin, because the thing is I love cabins, but I don't like being too far. So imagine a metropolitan city with like a mile in the middle of just a secluded chic cabin. To me, that I love. As long as I know I'm close by to a city, if I can see the city, but that's the environment that I love. So
No,
it's
it's a good
weird, but
balance.
that to me is like my favorite. That's my favorite creative
So like warm,
space to be
cozy
in.
treehouse cabin that's in the city, but not.
Warm, cozy cabin, but in the city, but not
I love
exactly.
that.
Yeah. So I can still hear honking and I can hear not the nature. I'm not a
No.
nature gal. I want to hear the city, but I want to be in that. But I want to be in that
Got it.
environment.
Oh, that's such a good one. I
One of the
love
best
this.
little
Literally,
spots.
everyone has the most
Thank
interesting,
you.
different answers, and it's my favorite to hear every time. I love it.
Oh, yeah. This is a great. You have the
Oh,
best
thank
prompts.
you. Well, that's kind of all I've got for you. Do you have any final thoughts, advice for anyone who's
Amazing.
trying to find themselves, empower themselves?
You can, yes, listen, you are the day when the day ends, there's a new one coming up. Like I always think about, like, you don't have to win a gold medal every day. Something my dad told me. You don't have to win a gold medal every day. You can just have a normal day. You can have a sad day. You do not need to win a gold medal every day. And start to speak to yourself the way that like you would speak to your best friends when they're down, or the advice that you would give them. Continue to practice that. It's really hard. I have trouble doing it. You can find me on Instagram and TikTok and Snapchat and everywhere, just at Sue Spacey. And my DMs are always open.
Yay.
It's true. I respond to all my DMs. I respond to every DM
Oh,
that I get, unless it's a bot or unless it's like a troll. So you know where to find me.
amazing. Well, thank you so much. This was wonderful. I appreciate you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. I
Yes,
appreciate
I'll talk to
you.
you
This was so fun. Thank you
soon.
for having
Thank
me.
you. Bye.
Okay.